All right, so next we'll go to the fiqh part. So today we'll talk about tayammum. So if you remember last time we talked about what? Anybody? Ghusl. What is ghusl? Not the complete description. What is it? What is the definition? Over there, Yaman. What is ghusl? Okay, so that is a description. Okay, something like that. So the definition of ghusl, we said, it is the ritual shower. So it's not a normal shower, because usually you take showers every day maybe, or every other day. That's just for cleaning. But the ghusl is a ritual shower. You do it for because of something and to allow something. You do it so you're allowed and you're able to pray. And that's when you go into the state of major impurity. So you have to purify yourself through ghusl. So that is the definition of ghusl. Today, inshallah, we'll talk about tayammum. Now, tayammum is, we can translate tayammum as dry wudu, if you will, dry ablution. So if you cannot make wudu, there is an alternative. And the alternative is tayammum. So, inshallah, we'll talk about the conditions of tayammum. When is it valid, or when is it allowed? When does it become a substitute for wudu? And also we'll talk about how it is done, how it is performed. It is important because many times it is not possible to use water. So we'll have to learn the alternative of the wudu, the ablution. When we talk about the conditions of tayammum, first, all the conditions of wudu apply. If you remember, some of the conditions of wudu we mentioned were, for example, niyyah. So you have to have the intention. You have to know what you're doing. You cannot just come and wash. You have to know and realize what you're doing. So that is number one, niyyah. Number two, we talked about other conditions like Islam. And that is, self-evident. Obviously, if you're not a Muslim, you're not going to make tayammum or wudu. But they make it as a condition. Okay? And the third condition is intellect, meaning you have to be in a sane state. Right? So if you don't have the sanity or the intellect, then none of the worship is valid or even required. Again, if somebody is not in his sanity, you're not even required to do any worship. There's nothing on you. There's no responsibility on you. So that is number three. So I'm going quickly here because these are conditions for everything, for all types of worship, not just tayammum. Number four is slightly different, and that is tamyiz. So for the tayammum to be valid, it's not just a puberty or adulthood. Tamyiz is actually an age before that. Yani it's like around seven. Tamyiz is an age where you're able to discern and tell difference between good and evil, for example. Or tell difference between things. That is tamyiz. So basically we're saying that in order for the tayammum to be valid and to be, accepted, you have to be at least in that state or in that age of intellect. Like you're able to tell the difference between things. Otherwise, you won't even understand what you're doing. So that is one of the conditions. Again, it's not a common or famous condition, but it is something that scholars mention. Now, from here on, I'm going to specifically talk about tayammum. These are the conditions for tayammum. And that's number five. Time is a condition for tayammum. What does that mean? Scholars say that you cannot start tayammum before the entry of time. For example, you want to make tayammum for dhuhr. You cannot do tayammum before the time of dhuhr enters. Why is that important? Well, if you're making wudu, you can always make wudu before dhuhr, right? Like if you're going to pray dhuhr, and dhuhr enters what time? Let's say 12:30. It's totally fine if you go and make wudu at 12. When it comes to tayammum, though, it is different. You have to wait until dhuhr enters, and then you can make tayammum. So that's one condition scholars mention. So time is a condition for tayammum. It is not a condition for wudu. Number six is the major condition, and that is the inability to use water. So anytime you could use water, you're not allowed to use tayammum. Like, for example, somebody might say, well, it is really cold today, and I don't feel like making wudu, so I'm going to go ahead and make tayammum. Is that okay? Actually, it can become okay in some cases. We'll talk about that. But usually it is not, because water is available. So one of the conditions for tayammum to be valid is that you cannot have water, because water, by default, is the material, the substance used to make wudu. Only when you're not able to use water, it's not available, or you are sick, like you have a skin disease, and the doctor says you cannot use water on your skin. Your skin cannot touch water. So then you might have water around you, but you cannot use that water to make wudu. So in those cases, you're allowed to use tayammum, to do tayammum. There's also a condition. What if you have water, but it's not enough, and you need it for drinking? What do you do in that case? Do you, for example, do you use it for wudu, and you say, no, I have water, I need to make wudu, and then you die from thirst? No, you don't do that, obviously. So even if you have water, but you need it for drinking, then obviously you cannot use it for wudu. So in that case, it is allowed to do tayammum instead. And the last condition, number seven, is that you have to use a certain type of material to make tayammum, and that is the earth. The earth. So, the soil, or we call it dirt, but not dirt, but the dirt from the earth. So that is the material you could use. And some scholars mention some conditions. For example, they say that it has to have some dust on it. So, for example, you cannot use a solid rock that doesn't have any dust on it whatsoever. It has to have some amount of dust. And the reason they say that is because they say, if you look in the Quran and see how scholars are very observant of what they read, the ayah said, فَمْسَحُوا بِوُجُوهِكُمْ وَأَيْدِيَكُمْ مِنْهُ. It says, wipe your faces and your hands from it. So this is from. There's something that's getting on you from it, which is the dust. So that's one thing they mentioned to prove that it has to have some dust on it. It cannot be a clean rock, for example, that has no dust on it at all. So any material that comes from earth that satisfies those conditions is a valid tayammum material. You could use it for tayammum. And some scholars also allowed sand as well. So sand also is similar to the soil or the earth. So these are the seven conditions for tayammum to be valid. Is it clear? Any questions? I forgot to ask you, how many of you have heard of tayammum before? Anyone who has not heard of tayammum? Don't be shy, it's okay. Okay? And you? No, you're asking questions. I thought, no way. All right.
What is the
sa'ib tayyib? Tayyib, some scholars say it has to be tahir. It has to be tahur. So the question is, what is the meaning of sa'idan tayyib? Fatayammum sa'idan tayyiban. That's the ayah in the Quran. يعني الصعيد هو ما ظهر من الأرض. The earth that is visible to us, meaning you don't have to dig to get the dirt. It's enough to dig. And tayyib, so some scholars mentioned it has to be tahir. Obviously, all the soil is pure, but what if it has some najasa on it? So you have to make sure to avoid the najasa. Okay? So by definition, it is tayyib, it's tahur. Just like the water that falls from the sky, the water that, the rainwater, is tahur. وَأَنزَلَ مِنَ السَّمَاءِ مَاءً طَهُورًا. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala said in one ayah, Surah Al-Furqan, another ayah in Surah Al-Anfal, لِيُطَهِّرَكُمْ بِهِ. He said when the water fell on the people of Badr, But also the scholars took that as a benefit, that this water that falls from the sky has the effect of purification. It can purify you. Likewise, here it says that the earth is tahir, it is pure. And it also has the effect of tahur, meaning it can purify other things. And that's the difference between tahir and tahur. Tahir is pure by itself. Tahur is something that purifies something else.
So the comment about having dust, I don't know where it's coming from, but I recall all my grandparents, when they had a river rock, Summa, next to them.
Mm-hmm.
It had no dust anymore. And that's what they used when, and like, but you were insisting on the fact that it had to be dusty.
I'm insisting on the fact. Well, I'm just saying, scholars. Right. So let me repeat what he said. He said that what he's seen among his relatives or his ancestors is that they were using a rock that's been washed by water, or that it does not have any dust on it. Again, this is just a deduction from this ayah. Some scholars have taken that deduction, and they said that it has to have something that sticks on the hand. So at least there is some form of, transition, if you will. But you can argue that earth, the Prophet said also in a hadith, وَجُعْلَتِ الْأَرْضُ مَسْجِدًا وَطَهُورًا. In the hadith, he said that the whole earth was made for me as a masjid and as a tahur. What does that mean, by the way? When the Prophet said that the earth, the whole earth, was made for me as a masjid and as a tahur. We haven't heard from you guys there. I want to make sure no one falls asleep. I don't like that. Should I pick somebody? So again, the Prophet said, alayhi salatu wasalam, that the whole earth was made for me as a masjid and as a tahur. And I'm intentionally leaving those words in Arabic so you can tell me what they mean. So basically, the earth has two qualities, two characteristics. One is it is a masjid, and the other one is it is tahur, he said, not only tahir. Again, a difference, right? The difference between tahir and tahur. Anyone. You have to be under the age of 20 to answer the question. You're under 20? Wow. You're gonna have to tell me what you eat. So. Well, let's start with masjid. And I know many of you know it. You're just not courageous enough to raise your hand. Or you don't want to be put on the spot. What is a masjid?
You get pizza if you answer.
Easy one. Everybody gets pizza. Unless you want to have 10 boxes of pizza for yourself. Come on, what is a masjid? Oh. But we don't want your man to answer because he already answered. We want somebody else.
One want to answer here.
Oh, there. Okay.
People come to pray.
So where people come to pray, that is a masjid. Do you have any other definition of the masjid? There. The house of Allah. Okay. But again, remember, here the Prophet is saying the whole earth is a masjid. How is that possible? Are we saying that the whole earth is the house of Allah, or where people come and gather to pray, like the brother here mentioned? Is that it? Let me wait for you, because I really want to pick somebody here, and I'll get back to you. Come on, guys. Like you first heard this hadith. That's the first time you heard it, and you're reading it from Bukhari or some book of hadith, and you encounter that hadith. What comes to mind? Do you have another answer?
Anywhere you can make prayer.
Anywhere you can make prayer, okay. But why do we say that? How do you infer from the hadith that any place is a masjid? Okay, I'll go to Yaman.
Out how to ruin
Okay. So let me ask you, where does the word masjid come from? Sajda, sajada. Does that sound remotely familiar? What is sajada?
Prostrate.
To prostrate. What is sajda? It is a prostration. When you put your face on the floor. So masjid is any place where you put your face on the floor. Any place where you pray, really. Because prayer, sajda is an important part of the prayer, right? So any place, basically the Prophet is saying, any place you go, you could put your head on the floor and pray. Masjid here means a place of prayer. It doesn't have to be the masjid we know with the walls and the ceiling and the nice dome and the minaret and the minbar. It doesn't have to be like that. Masjid here means any place you can make sajda. That is the meaning of masjid. Now the reason we call masjid is because we do sajda so many times here, more than other places. So now it became, as a convention, we call it a masjid. But in reality, every place is a masjid. Why? Because like other religions, they dictate that you have to pray in a temple. They dictate you have to pray in a place. In Islam, we don't dictate that. You can pray anywhere you go. We all know if you go camping, where do you pray? You say, well, I have to look for a masjid in this town. Do you have to do that? No, you stand up and pray anywhere. That is why we say the whole earth is a masjid. Because you're allowed, in your religion, you're allowed to pray anywhere you go. You're at work, you can pray at work. You're at school, you pray at school. You're in the open, you're in the desert, you're on the mountain, on top of the mountain, on snow. It doesn't matter where you are, you can pray. That is the meaning of masjid. And that's a big concession in our religion, because other religions, like I said, they dictate that you have to pray in a particular place. You have to be in a temple, in a church, in a synagogue, whatever. In Islam, you don't have to be in a masjid. You don't have to be in a jami', in a mosque. So that is the meaning of جُعْلِيَتْ لِيَ الْأَرْضُ مَسْجِدًا وَطَهُورًا. Now this is a masjid. What about tahur? So here the Prophet is saying, the whole earth is a masjid and a tahur. Tahur, we said, something that purifies. So now, I already kind of told you the answer. What does that mean? And here we're talking about earth, like real earth. Not just the carpet, or not the carpet, or the building. What does it mean?
Still on the 20th? Or over 20 minutes?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I wanted him to speak up a little bit, but nobody's willing to come forth.
Somebody, come on. You pick your leaders, man. Let's go.
You want me to pick somebody?
Yeah, pick somebody.
Okay. Where should I start? Okay, Hassan. I'll start with my son. So, Hassan. So what does it mean when the Prophet said, alayhi salatu wasalam, وَجُعِلَتْ لِيَ الْأَرْضُ مَسْجِدًا وَطَهُورًا, that the whole earth was made as tahur for me?
So any part of the earth may purify
you. Yeah, that's it. It's not that hard. Was it hard? Were you clapping? Yeah, exactly. So anywhere, you're traveling, any place of earth, like real earth, you are in the desert here in Arizona, you go hiking, and time comes for salat, and you forgot your water, or you only have that dear bottle to you that you need for water, for hydration, what do? You can make tayammum. It's very simple. And you don't have to have any, like, it's not like masah where you have to wear the shoe with, you know, pure tahara in the morning. No. All you have to do is what we're going to say, what we're going to describe, but that's all you have to do. And you're good. You can pray. And that's such a big concession for us. Okay, good. Yes.
What if I am going to school or going to work and it's not feasible for me to wash my feet anywhere? There is no place to wash my feet.
Now we have the other concession, which is masah. So we talked about that last time. So let me repeat. The question is, what if I go to school or to work and it's not feasible for me to wash my feet? What do I do in that case? And my immediate answer was...
It didn't happen prior.
Oh. Okay, your fault. So the first answer was, because they're going to be multiple, the first answer was, just hold on a bit on that thought. The first answer was, we have another solution for that, and that is that you make masah, you wipe on your shoe, on your sock. But the condition for that is that you have to have wudu in the morning. But then he said, the second part of the question, well, I forgot to make wudu in the morning. Or maybe, you know, he made wudu, but then he broke it, and then he wore his shoe or his sock. Yani, in that case, I mean, there are different ways. I mean, you just have to look for the best solution. For example, you can try and wash your feet if you can, if this is not feasible at all. Then there are different solutions. Either you make intention to combine the Dhuhr and Asr, for example, and if you have time to go and pray home before Maghrib, you can combine the Dhuhr and Asr. That's one possibility. Another possibility is, if you know you're going to run out of time completely for Dhuhr and Asr, and you don't have any, because again, there's no place for tayammum, because you're inside the building, and there's nothing like earth in the building. Unless you can find a plant or something that has some soil around it, I don't know. But let's say you don't find it, the last resort is to pray as you are. Because that's all you got. Yeah, because you don't have. And similarly, like for example, there are people who are sick and they're in bed the whole time, and there's no one to bring them earth or like soil. In that case, they pray as they are. Because, you know, the scholars have said, ittaqullaha mastata'tum. As Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala told us, you do your best. You seek, righteousness as much as you can.
So is there one option, possibly?
Yeah, if you have the material, yes.
Yeah, so it's okay to do tayammum.
Of course, like we said.
Even though the water is available in some sinks.
But again, I mean, it all depends on if you could use it. So it's not just the availability, it's also whether you can get to it. Like for example, what if there's water but you're not supposed to use it? Like there's a guard on the water and they don't let you use it. Or scholars mentioned all kinds of scenarios. But like, for example, somebody who's sick and cannot use that water. They have a skin disease and they cannot use it. Or you need it for drinking. So really, I mean, it depends on the situation.
But he's saying at work, there's no guard, there's no...
Yes.
The bathroom is there, you mm-hmm. might make a mess, you know, and they have to take new shoes. Is tayammum allowed in that case?
Again, it depends on... So the question is, at work, you do have water, and no one, there's no guard on the sink to stop you from it,
yeah.
And etc. Like I said, is it feasible or not? I don't know the situation. I mean, sometimes it is feasible to do it. I've seen people do it in the past. And now it depends if you're going to get in trouble or not. So that's the other thing. It depends. If you think you're going to get in trouble, don't do it. Also, what I've seen done by several people, they really give a bad image of Islam. When they make a big mess, they're washing their feet, everybody's watching them. I've seen it done in hotel room, in hotels where people, like say there's an Islamic conference and there's like 2,000 people attending the conference and everybody is going and doing wudu in the restroom and they create puddles and really hazardous situations in the restroom. And they don't even clean it. I mean, if you clean it, okay, I can understand. But they don't even bother to clean it. So in that case, I think it should be avoided if it's going to lead to that. Yes?
I did it through my work, which I washed my feet on the sink. The best way you do it is when everyone is at lunchtime. So can you have very few people to show up? I haven't seen anyone since I did it.
So the brother has a recommendation. He said he's done it during lunchtime. Usually people are not around to see him. So sure, like I said, I mean, if you can find a solution, and this is only one time, I hope. I mean, hopefully either plan it ahead and you can wipe, or, you know, nowadays, alhamdulillah, many workplaces have, places for wudu. And, we have other options, like I said. If you can go outside, for example, and do wudu outside. Like, it doesn't have to be at your work. You can go to a public restroom, you could lock and,
He said he didn't have wudu on the way to work, but if he did Fajr that morning, if I did complete wudu, which case he...
No, but he said, what if you wore your sock after you broke your wudu?
Yeah.
Not everybody goes to work immediately after Fajr, right? You might go to sleep, and then you wake up and go to work.
Okay. In the morning, I take a full wudu without my socks, put my socks on, from say, maybe Dhuhr, I can do mess.
Correct.
So,
So if he...
That's totally fine. That's valid. But he did not do that. So to repeat, he said if somebody woke up in the morning and did full wudu and wore their socks and shoes, then that's totally fine. You can wipe on it. But he's saying he forgot to do that on that day.
So he
put his socks after he broke his wudu. Or, you know, he slept after Fajr and then he woke up and he put his shoes and left. Yes. We're not done yet, by the way. So can we keep one more, inshallah?
On the khufayn or the socks, is there a condition has to be above the ankle?
So you missed that whole class. This is not a class about masih now. But quickly, there are conditions mentioned by some scholars, but we mentioned as long as it covers the place of the washing, like it reaches the ankles, that's fine, inshallah. Okay, so these are the conditions for the tayammum. We have not talked about tayammum yet. What is it? So the process or the description of tayammum is really simple. All you have to do is, you make niyyah, so you say, you know, in your mind, that I'm gonna make tayammum. You say Bismillah, right? I'm gonna ask you, so you better pay attention. You say Bismillah, and then all you do is, and there are two options or two ways to do it. Either you take your hands like that and put them on the dirt or on the soil, on the earth once, only once, and then after you take them off, you could also wipe the dirt or you wipe, the soil. And then you wipe your face exactly like you wipe it when you're making wudu. So make sure the whole face is covered. And then you wipe your hands. These are the only two members that you have to touch when you do tayammum. You don't have to do anything else. Not the head, not the feet, nothing. Just the face and the two hands, like that. And you're done. You're complete. You have complete tahara, purification. And there's a hadith that says, "Atayammumu darbatun lilwajhi wal kaffayn." There's a hadith that proves that only one is enough. Now, some scholars say you do it twice, meaning the first one, you touch the floor and you wipe your face, and you touch again and you wipe your hands. So that's another way, another method, but. You know, like I said, once is good enough. Okay. The last part, we want to talk about invalidators. What does invalidate tayammum? Basically, there are four invalidators. Try and keep that in mind. Number one, anything that invalidates wudu, invalidates tayammum. So we talked about that before. All the things that invalidate your wudu will also invalidate your tayammum. Number two is finding water. As soon as you find water, let's say you did not have any water. The minute you lay your eye on water, your tayammum is gone. It evaporates. It goes away. You no longer possess tayammum. It's gone from you. You have to make wudu. So the seeing of water, the seeing of water itself will invalidate tayammum. That's if you don't have water. Yes.
Would an ocean count?
Yeah. The ocean... like sea water or salt water counts, because the Prophet ﷺ said about the sea, هو الطهور ماؤه الحل ميتته, that the water of the sea is again tahur, and again the word tahur means what? Purifier. It is a purifier. It purifies us. So yes, the ocean, the sea, all kinds of natural water, if you will, is valid. Okay. Now, also, if you were sick, and let's say you were healed, you're cured from that sickness, then also you have to make wudu, and the tayammum is no longer valid. Okay? So that is condition number two, or the invalidator number two. So number one, any invalidator of wudu is an invalidator of tayammum. Number two, as soon as you find water or you're able to use it, then tayammum goes out of the window. You invalidate your tayammum. Number three, the time is over. What does that mean? You made tayammum for dhuhr, and now dhuhr time is over. Your tayammum is over too. So when asr enters, tayammum again. So tayammum is only valid for one period. You made tayammum for maghrib, When Isha comes, your tayammum is gone. You have to do another tayammum. And that is the difference between it and wudu. Wudu is valid as long as you have it. Tayammum is not like that. It's dictated by the times. Number four actually is kind of similar to number two. Zawal al-mubih lahu. Anything that made tayammum valid or permissible, if that goes away, then tayammum goes away. And that really is referring to the sickness. So sickness made tayammum permissible, like a skin disease, or you had some itches, or you had some allergy, and you could not use water. But as soon as that allergy is gone, the tayammum is gone as well, and you have to make wudu. Yes. Oh. Okay. Thank you. So, but that's similar, actually, so we can lump it together. Anything that makes tayammum permissible, if it goes away, including sickness, then your tayammum becomes invalid. Okay, so these are the invalidators of tayammum. Any questions? This is basically all I want to cover in tayammum. It's like I said, simple to the point. The actual, tayammum is easy. You just have to remember the conditions, what makes tayammum permissible, and also what invalidates tayammum. And if you do that, you should be good to go. Any questions? Good question. So yes, you can, for that period, let's say you made tayammum for the dhuhr period. So the question is, can I pray nafil sunnah along with fard using tayammum? The answer is yes. So let's say you made tayammum for the time of dhuhr. In that period of time between dhuhr and asr, you can pray as many nafil, as many fard. Like say you are making up some fard from the past. Like you did not pray dhuhr yesterday, you forgot. This is a common excuse by some youth. I forgot. So let's say you forgot from yesterday and you just remembered. So now you're going to pray two dhuhrs. One the dhuhr of today and the dhuhr of yesterday, for example. It's okay because now you're with that window. In that window between dhuhr and asr, you can pray as many nafil, as many sunnah, and as many fard as you want. Yes?
So there is no... pretty standard, the hands in the face, there are no variations, this school does this extra.
Not to my knowledge. I think maybe there are some schools, again, the question is, are there any variations among the schools of fiqh as far as how tayammum is done? Not to my knowledge, but I think there might be some scholars who say you wipe maybe the whole arm, but the common opinion, the strong opinion is that you only have to wipe the hands. Other than that, I'm not aware, except the variation I mentioned, which is some people say it can be done only once, and some say it has to be twice, like you touch the earth twice. Okay, let me take more questions from someone else. Yes. You're combining. Okay, that's a good question. So what if you're traveling and you're combining two salat, like dhuhr and asr? Like I said, if you are doing it within that time, like you're doing it between dhuhr and asr, so you're covered. So you can do two prayers, inshallah. In that case. Question you?
In the order you said was the face, then the hands. What was the order of...
Okay, so the question is, what is the order? The order, yes. First you do the face and then the hands. Kind of similar when you do wudu because the face comes first before the hands. So similarly, for tayammum, you do the face first and then you do the hands. Although in this case, you're not doing the whole arms, but still, it's the same order. Yes?
So tayammum for wudu, what about for ghusl?
Same thing. So the question is... we're doing tayammum in lieu of, in place of wudu. Can we do tayammum in place of ghusl? And the answer is yes. Absolutely. Now, inshallah, we're going to go to this segment of hadith and we're going to see the proof of that. I believe there's a hadith here in Umrat al-Ahkam that relates to ghusl as well. Maybe that's a good time to move to the last segment of tonight's. Actually, now maybe it is official. It's Sunday night halaqa. We're gonna call it SNH, Sunday night halaqa. So
Saturday.
Oh, Saturday. Sorry. Can you? No, it is Saturday night halaqa. It's still SNH, but Saturday night halaqa. I have this dread from Sunday, because next day be work or school. So I'm paranoid from Sunday. Okay. So if you open to the chapter of Tayammum, this is the last section. It won't last as long, but it's going to be basically covering the hadith related to Tayammum. So in this chapter of Tayammum, it's hadith number 36 in my book. 40 in your book? Okay. So 40 if you have the other book. If you don't have any book, just pay attention. We have extra, by the way, if you like.
48.
Page 48, okay. I have a unique book. It has its own pages and numbers. So the first hadith narrated by Imran bin Husayn radiyallahu ta'ala anhu, anna Rasulullah sallam qal, anna Rasulullah sallam ra'a rajulan mu'tazilan lam yusalli fil qawm. So the Prophet sallam saw a man who was in seclusion. He was not praying with everyone else. And he said, ya fulan, ma mana'aka an tusalli fil qawm? He said, oh person, what has kept you from praying with the rest of us? فقال يا رسول الله أصابتني جنابة ولا ماء. He said, I was afflicted by janaba. And again, janaba is the thing that requires the ghusl. We talked about this major impurity. We talked about it last time. He said, I am in a state of janaba and I don't have any water. فقال عليك بالصعيد فإنه يكفيك. He said, use the earth and it is enough. It is sufficient. And this is narrated by Bukhari. So that's a clear proof that it is okay to use tayammum even when you have to make ghusl and you don't have water. Yes?
So when you use tayammum to make ghusl, does that mean like the dust or the dirt has to go inside your hair?
No. You do it exactly like you do it for wudu. No difference. And in fact, one of the Sahaba thought exactly like you. So again, to repeat what he said, he said, when we do tayammum in place of ghusl, do I have to do like ghusl, like I have to, get dirt inside my hair and make sure? No, no, of course not. We said it is exactly the same way as you do it for wudu. Same exact description. And we're going to see that one of the Sahaba did, thought exactly the same way. The Sahabi was Ammar bin Yasir. So the companion Ammar bin Yasir, he said, بَعَثَنِي رَسُولُ اللَّهِ صَلَّى اللَّهِ سَلَّمْ فِي حَاجَةٍ. The Prophet sent me for something. فَأَجْنَبْتُ فَلَمْ أَجْرِ الْمَاءِ. So I went into a state of janaba and I did not have any water. I did not find any water. فَتَمَرَّغْتُ فِي الصَّعِيدِ كَمَا تَمَرَّغُ الدَّابَّةِ. So he said, I was rolling on the earth, back and forth, and rubbing myself on the earth, just like I would do if I had water. I mean, this was like the natural way of thinking. And then he said, ثُمَّ أَتَيْتُ النَّبِيَ صَلَّى اللَّهُ عَلَيْهِ وَسَلَّمَ. And then I came to the Prophet عَلَيْهِ وَسَلَّمَ. فَذَكَرْتُ لَهُ ذَلِكَ. And I mentioned it to the Prophet, what I did. So the Prophet said, إِنَّمَا كَانَ يَكْفِيكَ أَن تَقُولَ بِيَدَيْكَ هَكَذَا. He said, it would have been sufficient for you just to do that, like we talked about. So that would have been enough, he said. ثُمَّ ضَرَبَ بِيَدَيْهِ الْأَرْضَ ضَرْبَةً وَاحِدَةً ثُمَّ مَسَحَ الشِّمَالَ عَلَى الْيَمِينَ وَظَاهِرَ كَفَّيْهِ وَوَجْهِ. So, it says he put his hands on the earth one time, and then he wiped the left with the right. مَسَحَ الشِّمَالَ عَلَى الْيَمِينَ. يعني, this is the right, he took the left and he wiped like that. Most likely it is to remove any particles, because you don't have to put dirt on your face either. Or soil. And then وَظَاهِرَ كَفَّيْهِ, like that, like the outer part of his hand and his face. And this is agreed upon, meaning it is narrated by Bukhari and Muslim. The third hadith in this chapter عن جابر بن عبد الله رضي الله تعالى عنه أن النبي صلى الله عليه وسلم قال أعطيت خمسا لم يعطهن أحد من الأنبياء قبلي. He said, I was given five things that no other prophet was given before me. نصرت بالرعب مسيرة الشهر. I was given victory, pay attention, through terror, the distance of a month. I heard on Fox News one time, they brought this supposedly expert on Islam. He claims that he was, you know, I don't know, he was either pretending to be a Muslim and he was spying on some terrorist organization. And he was bringing this hadith, he brought Bukhari like with him, because this is narrated in Bukhari. He said, ha, this is a proof. See, Islam preaches terrorism. What he forgot to mention was that the Prophet ﷺ here, he was talking about two armies facing each other. It's not talking about going and killing innocent people and terrorizing innocent people, like some extremists do today. So we have to be careful when we read the hadith, understand the context first. Before, so basically what the Prophet is saying here is that when the Muslim army was to meet another army, when they hear that the Muslims are coming, they will be afraid of them. It's nothing about attacking civilians or killing innocent people. It's talking about two armies facing each other. I'm telling you, if any country on earth today said that our army is so strong and the other army is afraid of us or terrified of us, would anybody call them terrorists? No, right? But this is how people take things out of context. So he said, نصرت بالرعب مسيرة الشهر. Number one. Number two, وجعلت لي الأرض مسجدا وطهورا. We mentioned this part before. This is actually a unique characteristic of the Prophet and his ummah, his followers, that no other nation, no other religion was given this property. The fact that the whole earth is considered a place of prayer and also a place for purification. فَأَيُّمَا رَجُلٍ مِّنْ أُمَّةِ أَدْرَكَتْهُ الصَّلَاةِ فَلْيُصَلِّ. He actually explained what it means, what the meaning of the masjid. He said, so therefore, any man from my ummah or woman, of course, anytime salat comes, the time of prayer comes, you can pray anywhere you are. So don't say, well, I'm not in the masjid, I cannot pray. You cannot say that. So the Prophet said, anywhere you are and the time of prayer came, you pray. وَأُحِلَّتْ لِيَ الْمَغَانِمُ وَلَمْ تُحِلَّ أَوْ تُحَلَّ لِأَحَدٍ قَبْلِي. وَلَمْ, or you can say, وَلَمْ تَحِلَّ. تُحَلَّ or تَحِلَّ, both are correct. لِأَحَدٍ قَبْلِي. This is again related to war, the spoils of war. Were not allowed for the prophets before Prophet Muhammad, but it was allowed for Prophet Muhammad. This is again related to the prophets. وَأُعْطِيتُ الشَّفَاعَ. I was given intercession. Again, this is on the Day of Judgment. The Prophet was given intercession. And there are different types of intercession. We can talk about that in other times. The intercession of the Prophet himself. There's the intercession of you on behalf of your relatives on the Day of Judgment. And the last one, وَكَانَ النَّبِيُّ يُبْعَثُ إِلَى قَوْمِهِ خَاصَّةً وَبُعِثُ إِلَى النَّاسِ كَافَّةً. And the prophets before me were sent to their people, to their tribes, to their towns, and I was sent to all people. That's also one of the unique attributes of the Prophet, peace be upon him. So nobody can come and say that the Prophet Muhammad was only sent to the Arabs, or was only sent to Arabia, or the Arabian Peninsula. This is totally wrong. And this is a very strong proof here in this hadith that I am sent to all people. Also, it means that, for example, Prophet Jesus was only sent to his people. He was not sent to everybody on earth. He was only sent to the children of Israel at that time. Likewise, Prophet Musa alayhi salam was only sent to the children of Israel at that time. So he said, the prophets before me used to be sent to their people, and I was sent to everyone. And that's one of the unique attributes of the Prophet ﷺ. Now, obviously, the reason we mention this hadith in this chapter is because of the word that the earth was made for me a source of purification, which means you can make tayammum with earth. That's the reason it is mentioned in this chapter. Otherwise, the hadith is very, you know, it's talking about all other things. I mean, talking about a lot of other things. Okay, so this is the conclusion of the chapter. And if no other questions, it is also the conclusion of the halqa tonight. Any last questions? Yes, over there.
What is the looks like the last hadith you read.
The sequence, you mean?
Yes.
So the question is, it seems like one of the hadith we mentioned, the middle hadith, it mentioned the sequence differently. It mentioned the hands first and then the face. Yes, I mean, and sure, if you want to follow this hadith, by all means, I'm just saying that scholars mentioned that you follow the sequence of wudu. But, you know, there's a hadith here that, but again, you can argue that when you have waw, the waw does not mean a tartib. If you have and in Arabic and in English too, it does not mean a sequence. Like for example, if I say, I ate meat and rice and vegetables and salad and dessert, it does not mean that sequence. I could have eaten dessert first. I don't recommend it, but you could have done that. You could have eaten salad first and then meat. So when you use and, it does not mean an order, a sequence. But if you said, I ate salad, then meat, then rice, then dessert, it means a sequence. Likewise, in Arabic, for then we have thumma, we have fa. But if you have wa, which means and, it does not necessarily mean an order. So here in the hadith, it says, ثم مسح شمال العالمين وظاهر كفيه ووجهه. Just wa, wa, wa. So Allahu A'lam. You still could use it as an argument, as a proof that you can do it in a different order. That's fine. And the order is not as important as wudu, because we said wudu, it has to be in that very specific order. Wallahu a'lam. Any other questions you had?
This is just a general question.
Mm-hmm.
With this prevailing Islamophobia in Europe and in America, should the Muslim weary of performing their prayers and their rituals in public?
Okay, that's a very good question. The question is, with the rise of Islamophobia in Europe, in the United States, in the Western countries in general, should Muslims be wary or at least careful in worshipping in public and exhibiting their acts of worship in public? Wallahi, I mean, I think I would like to say that it is really up to the individual. I would like to say that you should keep it in public because this is our right. And no matter what people say, it is no doubt a constitutional right that you practice your religion to your satisfaction. And nobody, as long as you're not intruding on someone else's right, no one can come and take that right from you. So, in essence, yes, we should do that. Because if we don't, then they're winning and they're basically taking our rights from us. And we're actually enabling them to do that. Because it's all about intimidation. A lot of what you hear is about intimidation. They want to intimidate you. They want to make you, you know, feel that your practice is almost illegal or is illegal. And there's nothing illegal about it. You're just, you know, you're just worshiping God, just like everybody else, but you have a different way, different method. So my advice is to be courageous and do it. However, there could be some cases, some situations, like somebody is physically threatening you, or you look around and all people are looking at you like, and they're either afraid or they're looking in a weird way. Like say, for example, you know, you are at the airport and everybody is waiting to board on the plane. There's lots of people and you come in the middle and you bring your sajada, your prayer rug. You lay down and you go for this long ruku and sujood and with your kufi and everything. Kind of asking for trouble. So, you know, I don't recommend you do that in such a way. But in general, no, it is our right. Because what is next? If we're afraid to pray in public, people will come later and say, you can't pray in this place, you cannot pray in the masjid, you cannot pray in the mosque. Oh, you are implementing Sharia law when you are praying in public or you come into the mosque because this is part of Sharia, to pray. Or to pray in congregation, you should not pray in congregation. Or your prayer looks weird because you do ruku' and sujood, maybe you should pray like, you know, differently, change your prayer. It never ends. So no, this is totally our right and we should do it. We should not be afraid of it. We're not doing anything wrong, you're not breaking the law if you pray in, you know, the Muslim prayer. And there is nothing to be ashamed of.
I thought,
yes,
one of the main conditions that many scholars said that to be in a non-Muslim country, you have to be vocal and visible to be a Muslim, non-Muslim.
Well, the condition they mentioned, the question is the about being in a non-Muslim country. Some scholars mentioned, what they mentioned is that you have to have the ability to practice your religion. So if somebody is not allowing you to practice your religion, and it becomes to a point where you're not allowed, like it's against the law to practice your religion, then yes, you should leave. Like, for example, God forbid, tomorrow there comes a law that says you can no longer pray the Muslim prayer, or you have to eat pork. Like, you make it a law. Like, I'm just hypothetically speaking, right? I'm making up a presumed law. But if there was something like that that prevents you from individually practicing, because obviously we're not talking here about, you know, a Muslim court, for example. We're talking about individual practice. If it becomes a point where you cannot practice your worship, your ibadah, your religion, on an individual basis, then yes, you should not be staying in that country, whatever it is. So, but I don't think that will ever happen, and I hope and pray it doesn't, but that would be the condition, that you're not able to practice your Islam. Naam?
It's up to us to let it happen.
Yeah, to a certain extent, yes. Like I said, I mean, if we enable them, like they intimidate us and we subdue and we, kind of listen to that propaganda, that intimidation, then yes, we are enabling them. But sometimes it could be out of our control too. So that can happen as well. But yes, we should fight as much as possible to prevent that from happening.
So those people actually, they still are praying from comfort and ask about Islam.
No, in some cases, yes, it could be a way of informing people about Islam, and it could be a form of da'wah, yes. I think we were tired now. We should definitely close. And I think the pizza is ready, has been ready for a while. It's cold now. It's getting cold. So is there somebody outside eating pizza already? I hear some voices. Okay, phew. Okay, we're done. Alhamdulillah, thank you. Jazakumullah khair. Subhanakallahumma bihamdik. Nashhadu an la ilaha illa ant. نستغفرك ونتوب إليك والعصر إن الإنسان في خسر إلا الذين آمنوا وعملوا الصالحات وتواصوا بالحق وتواصوا بالصبر جزاكم الله خير والسلام عليكم